You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I will tell this story on the podcast, but thanks for listening, of course. First, I need to actually get under the way with the intro before I just go off and talky-talk. But this might be one of two or three movies our elementary school owned, because I must have seen it a dozen times while in school. But Cool Runnings, man. A hard apple John Candy. I make him a hard candy apple, I guess. And then some catchy tunes, some Jamaicans. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure I saw this movie 100 times. It's fun, it's goofy, it is what it is. Hope you enjoy. This episode is coming out, obviously. Thanks for coming out to my Masters of the Universe show, supporting my group, even though I wasn't on the episode or the performance. It's always important, and I appreciate you guys who did it. And I guess hi to those who came out and saw me. Also, join the Patreon. Next month, I'm on the Cineprov panel. We're doing Masters of the Universe. Man, Dolph Lundgren just messes with my head. We're doing Rocky IV, kind of nice 4th of July, as a man punches his way down the Berlin Wall and saves America, I guess. And a robot, I believe. 5 stars, iTunes, Spotify. We're on Spotify. I don't know how you listen, but Spotify. Good. And ESO Network has a Patreon. We have stuff for it. Thanks for supporting us.
Welcome to the Soul Forge, a place of silent mystery, quiet contemplation, and outright mayhem. Join your host, Sean Vanderloo, as he guides you through the adventures of living. Together, we'll talk about life and love, sex and dating, joy and heartache, memories and loss, and so much more. Don't worry, it's not nearly as pretentious as it sounds. Get ready for life, the universe, and everything on the Soul Forge.
SoulForgePodcast.com.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, according to friend of the show, Michael Krause, we watched the only movie my elementary school owned. We watched 1990, I didn't even look this up. 93's Cool Running. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, editor-in-chief of The World According to Quinn.
Oh no, he's trying to single white female my life.
Oh boy.
Yeah. It's single white male.
Wait, he's not Matt Quinn?
He's going to shave his beard and take over my job.
Well, just so long as he doesn't toss your dog off the balcony.
That would be most enjoyable. And on panel we have...
Matthew W. Quinn.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I came in last place at the Olympic triathlon in 2004.
In what? Triathlon?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. How'd that go?
Well, I lost consciousness from 2004 to roughly the middle of 2006.
I don't even know what's in the triathlon. It's the punt, pass, and kick competition from
Peanuts. I didn't know either, but they let me sign up for it, so I'm like, hey.
Run, bike, swim, and that the triathlon?
Yeah, that's the triathlon.
I don't even know if it's an Olympic sport.
I think it is. Anyway, Cool Running.
Yaman.
What do you guys think?
There's going to be a lot of white boy doing Jamaican accents and getting all offensive on this, isn't there?
Yeah, man. Culture we'd be appropriating.
Appropriating. Eating.
Yeah, man. Lion of Judah.
You are the whitest human being who's ever lived.
That's why it's funny.
I do remember watching this as a kid, not in theaters, but it was like a very popular Blockbuster rental at the time. I'm not sure how it did in theaters, but... Everybody seemed to know it, and they still know it to this day. It's kind of...
I saw it in theaters.
Oh, did you?
Really now?
Yep. This Come was, on, I saw it in the theater.
How was that?
I remember it being a lot heavier in places, more like the scene where Junior and his father have their argument in the hotel. I remember it being a lot sadder and more
poignant. Oh, that whole cliched thing where he's like going, "You're going to come back and run the work at that big bank."
Yeah, and then when their sled flips and their head's being dragged against the ice, it was a lot scarier. And then when they all get out and they start carrying the sled, it was a lot more dramatic and meaningful. And watching it again, I mean, it's not bad. It's just meh.
Yeah.
Is this one of the Matt Quinn patented watch it once and then never have to watch it again?
Possibly. Yaman. I should have said possibly. I should have said Yaman, yeah. hey, I was in a 24-hour film club where I was a white Rastafarian.
Whoa.
I wore a Hawaiian shirt, a big flowing wig, and sunglasses at night.
So you can keep track of visions in your dreams at that time? What was going on with that?
Yeah, let's back this up. You were in a comedy group in which you did what now exactly?
You had to make a movie in 24 hours.
Right.
So I was a white Rastafarian. I wore like a Hawaiian shirt and a long flowing wig on and talked in this patois the entire time.
In other words, he was a Rastafarian.
Yeah.
Well, they have white and Native American Rastafarians.
Sort of. I mean, so again, let's back up here. What was the thing about? Like, that's such a weird thing to throw out on this podcast.
It was make a romantic comedy, but no one really wanted to do it. They were all just really weird.
Were you the gay best friend?
No. So somehow this guy was supposed to go on a date with his girlfriend, but his car broke down. He got picked up by these various strange people. There's a profanity spewing Korean who just got out of prison. A just nasty redneck dude with no teeth, and me, the white Rastafarian.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like deleted scenes from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. That's
very
what this
much
sounds
so.
Like.
Trying parading around his royal totem bombs.
Yeah, the Korean guy was trying to pimp the guy to the redneck, and I'm like, "You don't do that, man. He's got a real girlfriend, man, not man girlfriend." Yeah, yeah.
Where does the yah come from?
I'm not sure where I should start to be offended with that joke.
The second Quinn shows up in a Rastafarian, it shows up with dreads, you're in trouble.
I'm picturing...
The second a white guy shows up in dreads, you're in trouble, effectively.
Yeah.
All right, we've prattled. Quinn,
so
you have your notes.
So was it problematic enough for you?
Do you have an outline?
Yeah, I have some. Oh, I can outline it. Okay, so the movie starts out with... that's something I like. It starts out pretty quickly, and they're good character moments. Like, we have... the lead guy, Bannock, I think is his name.
Yeah.
And he's a teacher, but he wants to be an Olympic sprinter like his dad. And then they have his, and he's being encouraged by his Rasta best friend, Sanko, I think.
Sanka.
Okay. And he runs.
Decaf coffee.
Yeah. And so he's running with these, this big bald Sasquatch man and Junior, who's from a wealthy family, whose parents just kind of indulge him in his running hobby.
Are you referring to Mr. Yul Brynner himself?
Yul Brynner, which is funny because they never acknowledged the joke.
They did briefly.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Junior trips and falls and trips up both Bannock and Yul Brynner. And so they basically flunk out of the Olympics.
It's this pre-qualifying run where you have to make a specific time. And Bannock trips at the end and doesn't make it to the finish line. And then he has this conversation with his, that professor?
I think he's like the head of the Jamaica Olympics board or
okay,
something.
Okay, yeah. Talking about, well, you've got, try again in 4 years.
Right. And for you youngsters who don't remember this because you're young and you're stirs, at the time, the Olympics were in two cities at the same time, one for winter and one for summer, and they were in the same year as opposed to staggered every other year or every 2 years. So while the Summer Olympics were happening in Seoul, that winter they were happening in Calgary.
That's in Alberta.
It sure is. It's the most Canadian place I can think of at the moment. Is this your third character on this show?
Why not? The more the merrier.
Sure.
Sure. Come over here and have a Molson's.
Oh, eh? I like that Molson's, eh? Yeah, man.
Good lord, that just happened.
I'm just going to do the Matt Quinn racial translator, just him being vaguely white into things.
Yes.
Also, I do like how the tall, bald guy is Yul Brynner. I'm just going to throw that out. Like, because all I know Yul Brynner from really is The King and I, and he's just a bald guy in that.
Yeah, that was pretty much Yul Brynner's M.O.
Wasn't he the Pharaoh in one of the Exodus movies?
Maybe in the Ten Commandments. Let me take. Ten Commandments.
Yeah. So, yeah, just bald guy. So, there you go. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, they were forgetting a whole bunch of things. After he talks to the head of the Olympic Committee, he sees a picture of his dad with some random white dude that lives on the island who had an idea to turn Jamaican sprinters into bobsledders.
Right.
And so they go and track down this guy, Irv. That's John Candy, who, what's it been, over 20 years at this point, and I'm still in mourning?
Something like that. He's a full expat now. He's just a chubby guy drinking rum on the beach, which I kind of get.
And working as a bookie. So, like, is he still alive? Who knows?
I don't think he's working as a bookie. I think he's losing money to bookies.
Yes. Oh. They say at some point he's working as a bookie, but he isn't doing very well. But anyway, they hire him as their coach to put together a Jamaican bobsled team.
After basically stalking him in the bathroom, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes, yes. And eventually, Bobby LaRue and his team of rowdy misfits go to Calgary to compete in the bobsled competition to save the rec center. No, that doesn't happen.
To show up the rich kids. This is more Bad News Bears than it is Bikini Car Wash.
Oh, man. Could you imagine if this movie turned into a Bikini Car Wash?
Well, they do have all those ways they try and raise money, like with Yul Brynner arm wrestling, like half the town getting beat by a woman.
And the kissing booth.
And the kissing
booth. Yeah, I think his wife or a girlfriend, whatever relationship she precisely was, didn't approve.
Well, I mean, you are overthinking these jokes. They're the simplest gags. Like, this whole movie is kind of strung together with these simple little gags, which there's nothing inherently wrong with, but that's just kind of what it is.
Yeah, I have in my notes here, the humiliation montage has its moments.
Well, I do like the bit where Sanka loses his dread.
Oh, when he freezes
when
off?
When he freezes his dread off.
I must have missed that part. I just remember him rapping. And people were paying him to shut up.
The one guy paid him to shut up.
Yeah, he made $1.60 or whatever because he's terrible.
All right, full disclosure, I'm not sure if I watched Cool Runnings or The Harder They Come for this episode.
Boo.
Okay.
Boo.
I earned that.
This movie actually did pretty well. We can play the game, but like, how much money do you think it made?
Do you want to go first, Matt?
Well, I saw the answer over his shoulder. It wouldn't be sporting.
Matt always ruins these games.
Okay, I'm going to guess $65
million. Almost exactly, 68.
Oh, all right.
Which, I mean, today's money is probably 120 some odd
that
million.
That was a very respectable showing back in the 90s.
Well, especially since this money clearly didn't cost a dime.
Like, oh, yeah.
It said it cost about 15, which even with an advertising budget, which this movie must have been advertised out the ass if all of us saw it, right? That's a pretty substantial profit. That's turning back almost four times the profit.
Well, apparently the guy that made this later went on to make him National Treasure. So,
oh, it's John Turteltaub.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Disney must own that man. But you know, this is a perfect example of a '90s movie that is so Disney. It doesn't say a lot, but it's perfectly digestible and perfectly enjoyable. So why not? It's the kind of thing that. God, it might be one of the best Olympic movies ever made because Olympic movies are inherently terrible.
Not that one that Leni Riefenstahl made back in the day.
All right, you win that round. But I'm just thinking, like, that Miracle movie is pretty crap.
I never saw it.
Chariots of Fire is fine. I'd rather watch this than Chariots of Fire.
Was that an Olympics movie? I've never seen Chariots of Fire.
It is an Olympics movie. All right. About the 1920 English running team.
Oh, how...
White.
Yeah.
Yaman.
Wearing high shorts. Well, I mean, that's kind of what this movie's about, making racial jokes.
I say my testicles have dragged down out of my shorts.
Yeah, that was something that was just said on this podcast. This is going to be like, I don't know, like, that's kind of the whole, I don't want to say the joke, but like at one point even John Candy says, I know it really scares you white people to have these black guys like bobsledding, which is kind of great.
Yeah, the racial undertones aren't really obvious, but I think they're there. Like the whole, maybe they're just using the whole, they don't think the humiliation thing.
Now, this was a part that didn't connect with me at all because it, yes, you're right. There are racial undertones, but it's never like overtly, there's never any overt racist statements against them. It's just, oh, look at these weirdos that have never bobsledded before. They can't compete with us, which is pretty much the same theme as every underdog sports movie ever made.
And they keep and the bar fight scene, the East German guy keeps calling the guy Jamaica in a kind of not respectful way.
Again, though, that's, again, emphasizing their underdog status, which, again, has some racial connotations to it considering the story. But at the same time, I don't know. It didn't feel – oh, I just figured out a better Olympics movie than this one, Munich.
That's a good one. Both the movie and your commentary.
All right, Matt. All right, so let's get into these characters a little bit. We've got completely forgettable people except for Sanka, who I think is good.
Who is dead many times over, according to the dialogue.
Yeah. What's it? We have... Oh, my God. Is that true? Sanka's Dougie Doug.
Yeah.
and Bannock is some guy named Leon.
Yeah, I mean, but... Leon doesn't matter as much as...
Dougie Doug was a big deal back in the day.
Yeah, and he's funny. I give him credit for being funny.
Now, to emphasize Matt's point, that's his entire name, is Leon in the Tribune. He's like Prince or Madonna. He's just Leon.
Didn't we do another movie where it was Leon and we were all commenting on that? We need to look up his filmography and see what he's done, if there's any myopia movies there.
I can take a quick glance while you're talking.
Okay.
Or don't keep talking, I guess.
Okay, so
We do Waiting to Exhale? Because he was in that.
I didn't think the characters are indistinguished. We have Bannock, who's trying to live up to his father. You have Yul Brynner, who's the angry thug who hates being Jamaican. Like, you know, everyone is...
He doesn't hate being Jamaican. He just hates the fact that, A, people touch him, and B, that he's being dragged along into this.
Well, I thought he's like...
No,
you're
he
like,
does want to leave.
You're like everyone on the islands. You're going nowhere and think you're going somewhere. He had some more smart alecky way of saying that.
He's the guy in a heist movie who's recruited at the last minute and doesn't talk.
And then you have Junior, who's under the thumb of his rich dad.
Right, who has got a great job lined up at the biggest bank in Jamaica, but doesn't want to take it. Although...
Named after three Jews.
There's that really weird late scene where his dad flies up to Calgary to get him back to the bank or whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, your son's in the Olympics. I think you can wait for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that seems stupid.
Yeah,
really stupid.
Yeah, at this point, that's called a fait accompli, or however you pronounce it. You know, it's kind of too late for him to stop him.
Yeah.
But no, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, at this point, when you've qualified for the games and actually made it, like, whatever. It's stupid. It's all stupid at this point. Then we have Raymond Barry, who plays the white guy that everyone hates. I, in my age now, I'm like, oh, is that guy from that X-Files shit?
Is he the one who twitches when John Candy implies he's a racist?
He probably. No. This is the tall guy who was on the team who hates him.
Okay, so you remember when John Candy goes before Olympic bosses, and he's like, and he makes a comment, and then you see that one old white guy visibly just twitch.
Wait, did you say his name is Raymond Barry?
Yeah, it's Raymond Barry.
Can we watch... Oh, that was Redmond Barry from Barry Lyndon. Excuse me.
Well, and he plays the senator that helps out Fox Mulder in the first season of X-Files.
Okay.
That's how I know him. I was just like... Because he looks much more healthy now. I don't know what coke he was doing back in the day, but he looks like a person. And then we have John Candy. John Candy is the best part of this movie.
The late, great John Candy.
Peace be upon him.
Mm. May Bobby LaRue get his crane shot in heaven.
I have nothing for you guys today. Peace be upon him, and may Muhammad walk with him. What are you doing now, man?
I was making an SCTV reference. I don't know what Matt was doing.
Matt was, I guess, trying to be deep. John Candy died the way he lived, fat. I mean, here's the thing: the idea that 20 years before he was a svelte young guy who could run whatever the 100 yard in under 10.
That was the most unrealistic thing. I mean, I love John Candy. He's a very talented comedian. He played a lot of great characters, but there is no chance in hell somebody like him was ever an Olympic athlete.
Well, and I mean,
maybe in shot put or something.
No, he's not muscular enough. Have you seen those people that do shot put?
I mean, let them
not work out for a while and keep eating, and then you get John Candy.
Oh my God. Mm. Okay, what else do you want to defend about this movie when we're making jokes?
I like the bar fight. That was actually pretty funny.
And then that sucked.
And then they tie in his how Yul Brynner is trying to get Junior to you know, man up, you know, the badass mother bit. And, you know, he does that with his father, which was kind of underwhelming. I remember the confrontation being a lot emotionally heavier when I saw it in 1993. And this one, it was just kind of meh.
You know what it reminds me of? The bar fight and The Replacements. Remember that movie?
I do. And, I mean, here's the thing where you're not wrong. It's a bizarre scene because so many little things aren't set up. And then it goes away and it comes back to the bar. Like, the kid, Junior, is literally chewed out. And he cowers. And then Brynner has to come motivate him and he comes back.
Right, yeah.
Right. And then it ends up with the bar fight. The whole time, Sanka is talking up some, like, blonde. And let's not gloss over the fact that they're in a honky-tonk in the middle of Calgary.
Oh, well, Calgary's a wild town.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, where they're playing.
Have you heard the thing about those Olympic villages where they have to, like, stock it with 15,000 condoms and then airlift more emergency condoms after those run out?
I think it involves I've heard that it involves clogging the toilets with condoms.
Either way, they're fucking a lot in the Olympic Village.
How
That's
does
my
that correction
point.
Make any difference?
I think I'm not correcting him, adding more details.
Either
I'm
way,
confirming what he's saying.
Either way, we don't see any of that detail in this movie, and it kind of made me pause. It's like, why are you people out at a bar right now?
Why is anything happening?
Well, you have to get to one step before you can get to the other.
They're in the middle of Olympic Village. All they have to go is, hey, you're young, you're hot, I'm young, I am hot, free condoms, let's go.
Yeah, and apparently that was kind of also the thing. Like, this movie does a lot of weird glossing over. They make references to being stoned, and it is the cleanest cut. They're toasting with Coca-Colas at one point, and you're just like,
I just saw obvious product placement.
You're cute. in real life, this is not their story, but it's based on the real 1988 Jamaican bobsled team, which really did end up crashing and really did. They didn't lift it over their shoulders. They pushed it along, but they really did finish the race like this. They all had different names, and two of them, when they crashed, just retired and started promoting rum drinks.
According to the Tribune, the Jamaican bobsledder characters in the movie were all fictional characterizations and were not based on their real-life counterparts. John Candy's Irv Blitzer coach character is also fictional, which disappoints me.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding was real life was these four guys from the Jamaican army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be not nearly as entertaining as our lovable crew of misfits.
Says who?
If you made it Sergeant Bilko goes to the Olympics.
What about Stripes goes to the Olympics?
Too many white guys.
Oh, yeah.
At least, is it Don Cheadle who's in that horrible Steve Martin remake of Sergeant Bilko?
Okay, that's something to defend her childhood, because I saw that when I was a kid and I liked it.
I owned it forever, and then I sold it because I stopped owning it.
Oh, Jeffrey Wright was also considered for one of the bobsledders.
He would have been great.
Yeah.
He would have been overacting so much. I could never be a bobsledder.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that this is all kind of paint by numbers. I mean, you've got the guy living in his dad's shadow. You've got the comic relief best friend. You've got the tough guy who doesn't speak but has a heart of gold. And you've got the guy who wants to follow his dreams and not follow in the footsteps of his successful dad, which is the banker. So it's...
Are you just describing, say, any 90s Disney movie?
Yes, that's the point.
Or a lot of sports movies in general. I mean, this was all a fun movie, but it was kind of cliched.
Exactly.
I mean, this is 93. I mean, I'm not saying that sports movies weren't cliche before then, but this is really kind of a callback to form in some ways, because you are also leaving the era of like the 80s where you had like the gritty movies that were sports. I'm thinking of Major League. I'm thinking of Bad News Bears. I'm thinking of Slapshot. I'm thinking of those movies from the late 80s where they...
Well, Rocky IV was also from the 80s. Just like to throw that out there.
Well, right. But, I mean, I guess stay tuned to Cineprov in July where I'll be riffing Rocky IV.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I guess wait for me to try to do my Sylvester Stallone. Yeah. It's down here somewhere.
Well, you could do the Russian guy. You know, I must break you.
the German guy playing a Russian guy. We really didn't like the Central Europeans, did we?
No, because they were such great stand-ins for the Eastern Europeans.
Well, I mean, it does bring you back to, I think, listening to a featurette on the Beer Fest DVD. On DVD.
Standard def? What century are you living in, Grandpa?
I know. Where they were talking about, like, the actual winner of the drinking Olympics was the Canadians, but you can't make a Canadian a bad guy because they're so friendly. So we turned them into Germans.
Swedish, by the way. Dolph Lundgren is Swedish.
Yeah, that's right. He's a Swede. And he's also smarter than all of us.
Well, yes, he is.
Well, the Vikings who built Russia were Swedes. The Swedish Vikings went east down the rivers to Constantinople, so it kind of works.
Is it Istanbul or is it Constantinople?
No, I'm glad you had something to say because I was breathless. I nearly died. My eyes rolled back in my head. I stopped breathing for a bit.
I saw
Why
it.
The fuck did you say that?
Because I realized there's a connection, however tenuous.
To what?
A Swedish guy playing a Russian.
He was tall and blonde, so they said, "You look Russian."
Yeah, pretty much.
That's all they did.
Well, I didn't expect them to put that much thought into it.
They didn't.
They didn't.
Trust
it was
me,
literally
they
just.
You outthought the producers. You outthought every. You know, it was either Dolph Lundgren or Boris from Rocky and Bullwinkle. And they decided Dolph Lundgren would be a little scarier. Just the smallest bit. And Jesse Ventura can't put out the accent.
Nowadays,
hey,
it's.
Hey, you, they're American?
Nowadays, it's Boris, Dolph Lundgren, or whoever that guy in Snatch was.
Oh, God, what the fuck?
The bullet dodger?
Yeah, the tall guy, the one who's in all of his movies.
Yeah, the guy. He was also the costume shop owner
so
in Eyes Wide Shut.
He was. He should never act.
Are any of the actors in Eastern Promises Russian?
No. I think the Mafia Don is. Whoever that actor was, like the head of the family.
Vinnie Jones. You're thinking of Vinnie Jones.
Yes,
I
of
hate
course.
Vinnie Jones. He's such a bad actor.
He's the juggernaut, bitch.
I thought that was actually funny.
He was great and gave a very touching performance in Eurotrip.
He sure did. Did you think it was funny when it was a video on E-Bombs World in like 2004 or in real life? When he actually said it in that horrible X-Men 3 movie.
When he said it in the horrible X-Men 3 movie?
I didn't care one way or the other. I'm just like, eh.
When he said that, I didn't leave the theater, but I immediately was like, well, this is garbage.
Did you leave it in spirit?
I started like first basing it with my girlfriend. It was 2003?
2006, I think, was that third X-Men movie?
No, I couldn't bring Candace to that, so that must have been something else.
All right, then.
No, that was just a tripe movie. I like when you start quoting internet memes in your movie, you're up Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like making an internet joke in a book, right? You're like, oh yes. If in the Da Vinci quote he goes, I'm Robert Langdon, bitch, you know, or Robert Langdon, and just starts tearing ass to the Vatican.
You're gonna love the sequel to The Thing in the Woods where I have a guy making a don't tase me, bro joke.
How old is this supposed to be?
It's supposed to take place in 2010.
That's still a 6-year-old reference.
The character is someone who doesn't get out very much.
Like you? The writer?
Ha ha ha.
You do realize that when people see that, they're going to have to look up what you're talking about. It's so old and so obscure that like, whatever.
Boy. It's a period piece.
Even then, the reference is kind of dated. Okay, speaking of taller people ganging up on smaller underdogs, Cool Runnings.
Right, almost. That was almost a segue.
Almost. I tried so hard.
That was God, I almost forgot. I forget his last name. I was going to say that was a Ben from a last podcast segue.
Ben Kissel?
Yeah, that was a Kissel. That was a Kissel segue. So effectively, they get to the Olympics, and the bobsled committee is again them from the beginning, right? They keep changing the amount of time they need to qualify. They keep doing all these things.
Yeah, they change it from a minute two to a minute flat, and John Gagne is just like, no problem, man.
Yeah. And then from
in that accent.
Yeah, it's worse than Matt's. No, it's not.
Well, that's the joke, though.
Yeah. And at one point, they even give him like the kind of African color, like Rasta knit cap, which is even funnier on a fat John Candy.
Well, one thing I don't get, though, is how quickly people turn on the side of the Jamaican team. They start out hating them, and in their first race, they do bad. Well, there's three races in this movie. There's the first one where they're going around the track like a pinball, which is what the announcers say. There's a second race where they actually do pretty good and like shave, what, 4 or 5 seconds off their time?
Yeah, they end up
which is crazy.
Place.
And then the next day in the final race, everybody's like cheering for them and the announcers have Jamaican bobsled team t-shirts on. It's like, what the hell?
Well, this is an interesting problem, which is something that you as an actual film critic – I understand being frustrated with, but me as a person who like looked into this like as a historically is actually interested. This is them trying to justify what happened in real life, because the apparently the Jamaicans in real life were drunk, they were loud, they were fun, they were party types in a very strict area. So people really did become obsessed with the Jamaicans, and like you can look up old. I think at the time NBC owned the rights, NBC coverage of them. They were everywhere. Even though this really did happen to them, where they really did flip over, rather than, you know, carrying it out traumatically, they pushed it to the end. They did finish. What ended up happening, though, is they were party animals that everyone became obsessed with. And you're right. In a standard sports narrative, this doesn't make a lick of sense. But here, it did actually happen. So they're trying to figure that out.
Well, we do see them, like they said, you know, we should be Jamaicans instead of being Swiss. So they ride up to the venue in their truck blasting that rap song.
Well, they're singing it.
Singing it loudly.
Yeah.
And they come up with a new chant to say before they push the bobsled down. But apparently in real life, nobody really hated them. They were just sort of, at the best, at worst, they were just sort of comic relief. It's like, oh, yeah, look at these crazy kids who, they made it to the Olympics. Good for them. And they're living it up. But they're not going to get a medal. But good for them for being here.
Well, and I guess to your point, it's a sport where you compete against yourself.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're an asshole, no one hates you at golf either, or like downhill sledding, like, or downhill skiing, or like you're competing against yourself. If you are, say, doing hockey, you have rivals.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I guess like this is the year of I, Tonya. You could have a Tonya Harding situation. I do like the idea that there's a scene in like a gritty remake where there's a Swiss guy loosening the bolt on one of the front blades.
Oh, I, Tonya was great. Can't there be like a scene of John Candy like
throwing a knife,
or drunkenly on an interview insisting he's a national security expert? It's like, but you're not though.
Or throwing a knife at Sanka and just getting stuck in his arm.
Yes.
And he's like, and Brenner goes, "You dead, man?" He goes, "Yeah, man." And he's like bleeding out on the floor.
Or
turns into Fear and Loathing for just a second.
We were just outside of Calgary when the ganja began to take hold.
Yeah, I think that's a more realistic interpretation of this movie.
That's the better Olympics movie, I, Tonya.
I, Tonya's actually a pretty good Olympics
movie. It's a great
movie. And it's even filmed like a fake documentary style.
Well, it's Goodfellas is what it is.
It is.
Something tells me that movie is very sad and hard to watch.
No, it's not. Well, it is sad, it's but
very
it's not
sad.
Hard to watch.
There are parts that are pretty hard to watch.
Well, the scene where she actually does get the butter knife in her bicep because her drunken mother threw it at her is pretty sad.
It's a rough scene. It is a rough scene. I do like her pulling guns on people, though.
I mean, her mom abuses her. Her husband abuses her. She abuses everyone else. Someone gets kneecapped. It just doesn't sound like it's much fun.
She didn't
and
kneecap.
Like you, it's very pro-Second Amendment because she pulls guns on people.
Well, she didn't Tonya Harding didn't kneecap that other skater. That was some guy.
I thought it was her husband or one of his goons.
No, it was a goon hired by her husband, which is why she didn't serve any time for it.
Yes.
There was no evidence that she told him to do it.
She may have, I think in the movie, she like offhandedly suggested, but that's not, you know, the same as ordering somebody to actually go and perform the hit. Yeah. The husband, though, went to prison.
The husband did.
I know, I'm just saying, all that Gilgary, stuff just sounds like name? It might be, it's just not going to be fun to watch. The movie just sounds painful.
It's actually pretty funny.
It's a good movie. I watched it on a plane. Galooly, Jeff Galooly
yes.
is his name. What
yes.
a horrible name for a person. He does sound like the kind of person who would end up on Unsolved Mysteries. Jeff Galooly, is he a Muppet or something?
Well, Tonya Harding sounds like the sort of name that would end up on Celebrity Boxing.
She sure did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a joke.
Thank you, Matt. I've heard of jokes. I get paid to be funny.
Wait, you're getting paid? What the hell?
Not on this show.
Oh, okay.
What was I going to say? Although I do think they make a compelling argument for Nancy Kerrigan being a real bitch.
She was just sort of a non-entity in I, Tonya, wasn't she? I mean,
well, right, but like I understand being upset that you worked so hard to get this far, and there's just this pretty thing who's wealthy and never had to really work a day in her life, who just gets everything handed to her.
Yeah.
I get that. Like, it's kind of the failure of American whatever. Like it's interesting. It's a good movie. This is a Disney movie, though.
Can you imagine Disney's version of I, Tanya?
And yes, Nancy it would be Kerrigan animated, and it would be between Daffy Duck, or whatever, the Lady Duck, Daisy Duck, and Minnie Mouse.
Ooh.
Oh, my God, and they hire Bluto to break her kneecap?
I'm just picturing Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding holding hands and having this come-to-Jesus moment where they realize, we're not so different after all.
That would have been an interesting last act for, like, Jeff Galooly. Like, him and, God, who else? A Son of Sam and, like... John Wayne Gacy, all those people who pretended to come to Jesus at the end to try to get clemency.
Well, didn't Son of Sam, like, actually come to Jesus?
Yeah, well, I mean, as much as you can. I don't believe it for a second. He did it to sell his story, and then he made money off books about it.
I thought the whole point was that he couldn't.
No, that doesn't happen until later. That doesn't happen until John Wayne Gacy.
I thought New York was called the Son of Sam Law.
Right, but that happens after he makes the money. You can't take the money back retrospectively.
Yeah.
So he had already sold his story and made millions of dollars because he pretended to come to Jesus. In interviews, you can hear him saying that it's all an act, but whatever, it doesn't matter. We're still talking about a goddamn movie.
Yeah,
bobsledding.
So, yeah, go see I, Tanya. In terms of Cool Runnings, though... I mean, probably the best scene in it was that whole scene where he realizes at the beginning that, there's another way for me to get in the Olympics. And he's like talking about, I'm going to go find Irv. I'm going to go do all this. One question, what's a bobsled?
Yeah, that's good.
that actually would make sense for what they're talking about.
Well, and John Candy plays a badass. Like, he fights for them. He's mad at them when they screw up. Like, he actually...
And he openly admits his own faults, like when the committee disqualifies him. It's like, oh, it's because you're past. Although he mentions he cheated. How did he do that exactly?
They talk about that. One of his former teammates comes up to the captain when he's studying, when he's cleaning up the, when he's shining the blades, mm-hmm. right? He goes, the person holding you back isn't your team. It's your coach. He got disqualified in blah, blah, blah. For adding weights to the front of the bobsled.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, I liked the second race. That was fun. And then I liked how they did it where when the bobsled goes haywire, everything just goes totally silent.
Although, would that really be cheating on the simple point that first you get to make your own vehicle in bobsledding, you build the sled, and second, in some cases... That's actually what you need for the track, so not everybody's not tipping over.
I think it is cheating. I imagine they look that up. That's something you can look. Like that line from Clone High, there's nothing in the rule book that says a giraffe can't play basketball. I'm sure they looked it up. I'm sure they looked up the one thing.
All right.
But I mean, to Matt's point, the second race was fun. I don't know. I think at the end this movie is beautifully successful. I find it funny. I find John Candy's role interesting in it. It's interesting to see him not be the comic relief.
Yeah, it is interesting to see him being the badass.
A heavy in another sense of the word.
Yeah, no, really. Like, he throws his weight around to make sure that they submit to his, like, and he calls them racist, which, frankly, the Winter Olympics have always been kind of racist.
All Olympics have been kind of been racist. Sure, it's all about European dominance over those undeveloped nations.
And European sports. There aren't a lot of African sports in this.
Though I do like that gag in The Critic about the island that's the best at that sport where you push a giant ball through that tiny door and it's because they got practice on Marlon Brando.
Bullshada. Ooh, Burger King. My well-practiced Marlon Brando.
Push, boys.
I could have been a contender.
Could you?
But now really? I got to put all the desserts in one blender.
Gross. That's funny.
I wish I came up with that. I think that's from The Critic or something.
This doesn't sound like a Critic line. I'm going to give you credit.
Well, I heard it from somewhere else. I don't remember where, though.
Credit withdrawn. anyway, with that in mind, we should wrap this up. We've been talking long enough. We'll go
mostly about I, Tanya, strangely enough.
We've been talking about shit. Like, here's the thing. without tipping my hand whether or not I liked it, this movie is kind of what you guys remember. Now, you might remember it as softer or more gritty than it was in real life, but that doesn't change what the movie actually was. I remembered beat for beat. I remember the awkward moments. I remembered the scene at the end where you watch the blade vibrating before they're going to flip over.
Yeah.
And all of those scenes were just as effective to me. The stuff in between might have been less sticky, held, whatever you want to say, whatever. Daniel, give us your final verdict.
Well, going off of what Nick said, I mean, it's perfect. It's a perfectly fine movie to like watch on a Sunday afternoon if it's like on TV or something. You can sit down, you can watch it, you can kill some time before you have to do anything, and it won't necessarily be a waste of time. But it's just kind of it's cliched. It's a lot lighter than I remember it. It's really a fill-in-the-blank sports movie where you have the same characters you'd expect in any Disney sports movie. You'd have the same plot. You'd have the same beats. You'd have the same jokes. I don't know. I guess it's effective at what it set out to do, which is good. And I like John Candy. I still miss the guy all these years later. But at the end, it just sort of, I can take it or leave it.
Matt?
As has been said, it is kind of a cliched sports movie. It's a little more interesting because these are Jamaican guys bobsledding as opposed to, I don't know, a baseball team or something. So as Nick said, it's probably one of those movies that I recommend you see once because it's all right. You see it once, and I don't know why you'd want to see it again. And it does have some good moments. I did like the Sanka. I did like Sanka. He was pretty funny.
He made you kiss an egg. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that egg that he's carrying around in that onesie the entire time.
Which is weird. The fact that he's cold and never warms up the whole time. The fact that Calgary seems to beat him immediately, which is kind of funny. I don't know.
The bit where he's in the ice cream truck and gets frozen.
Because they needed to get him used to the cold, and he still never gets used to the cold. There's a lot of physical comedy in here, which I think is actually still pretty good. Like when they're trying to walk on the ice and they can't get it.
Oh, yeah. And John Candy's perfectly graceful on the ice.
John Candy is great. I think John Candy and Chris Farley, we think of him as fat comedians, but what he is, which someone like Gabriel Iglesias is that they're physical comedians. They're really funny. And that's where he's at his best, other than these scenes where out of nowhere he's actually dramatic.
Well, what you need to do is just get out there on the ice. We're going to get out there and we're going to beat those Ruskies.
You sound like Mr. Meeseeks.
He was doing Down by the River.
Maybe Randu.
He has one voice. It just does shades of it. Like Billy West or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. If I were Billy West, man.
You have to start doing cocaine 6 years ago. It's his story, not mine. All right. So at the end of the day, I think this is a perfectly good movie. I think you can do better than Matt and watch it two or three times. I find it perfectly enjoyable. It's a tight 93 minutes or something. You could do worse with your time. And I think it's actually emotionally successful. Characters develop. They grow, especially Junior. It is kind of hackneyed, but it's only a 90-minute movie. So I give it some credit for the time saved. But with that, we're out of time. So tune in next week. Oh, I need to give you a hint. We're going to... It's hard to give hints that are enough to figure this out, but not so much that I give it away. So I'm just going to say this is a French sci-fi movie starring Bruce Willis. So tune in next week, or would Mila Jovovich be easier?
Is Jimmy Cliff in this one too?
Yeah, sure, why not?
All right.
Yeah, so tune in next week and every future week when I put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Hi, I'm Carla.
And I'm Michael.
And we're Go Postal Podcast.
The podcast where we read your drunken ramblings, postcards, emails, whatever you can think of, really.
And how do you get these sent to us? You can send it to P.O. Box 198514 in Nashville, Tennessee, 37219, or gopostalpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook.
You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. We release an episode every Monday. Auf Wiedersehen.
Ciao.
Myopia Defender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Dude Letter Podcasting.
It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks!
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.